Sports Interview with Anne Liguori is brought to you by IB Cool Athleisure Wear for men and women. Technology meets fashion with IB Cool, stylish UPF 50 plus sun protection, and ice field technology to cool your body temperature on hot and humid days. Look great and protect your skin. IBKUL.com. And by Tourism Ireland. Discover world-class links and breathtaking landscapes. Experience golf where it all began. Plan your dream trip to Ireland today at ireland.com/golf. And by Aer Lingus, the Irish flag carrier. Renowned for its warm Irish hospitality and exceptional service, Aer Lingus flies to Ireland from 19 gateways across North America. For more information and to secure a great fare, visit aerlingus.com.
Boy, what Rory McIlroy delivered this week was nothing short of cinematic. He doesn't just win, he takes all of us along for the ride and he puts himself through every twist imaginable. The brilliance, the bumps, the moments of doubt, and then the sheer resolve, it plays out like a Hollywood thriller. And somehow through all that drama, he finds a way to rise again and make history, becoming the fourth player in history to repeat as Masters champion and capturing his sixth major title. And joining me now is someone who also had a front row seat to all of it, bringing a unique, truly Irish perspective. Conor McKeown covers golf for the Irish Independent and has been on the ground all week in Augusta, tracking every twist and turn. Hey, Conor.
Well, thanks for having me, Anne.
Rory McIlroy, repeat champion. Did you think after he gave up that six-shot lead that he was going to get it done?
No, I didn't. Like, I have to be honest about my whole Rory journey last week, which was I went out early with him during his practice round and watched him play himself and Harry Diamond. And he looked to be in such control of his golf ball. And he seemed to be very relaxed and calm about being back in Augusta and all the very unique kind of attention that he had because he was the returning Masters champion. And that morning I saw him play. He nearly holed his shot on 12. He left himself a short putt on 13. And as soon as it was over, I spoke to everybody who would listen and I told them that Rory McIlroy was going to win the Masters. And by Thursday and Friday, I was telling anybody who wouldn't listen that Rory McIlroy was going to win the Masters. And then by Saturday night, I had no idea. So that's Rory McIlroy. And there was that little period after Friday when we thought, okay, this is what Rory is really about. This is him. He has demystified Augusta National and the Masters. He is finally playing to his potential here. And we're going to see him win in the style that we always thought he could if he brought his best stuff. But obviously the Masters doesn't work like that. And obviously Rory McIlroy doesn't work like that. And like everything that he does, I think the experience of watching him win it is embellished by the lows as well as the highs.
The roller coaster rides continue at Augusta National. You write about Rory's brilliance and his dramatic play with such poetry and punch. I really enjoy reading your work, Conor. Could you read a segment from your wrap-up article? Because I really think my audience would enjoy hearing your Irish voice reading your work.
Yeah, sure. Okay, I'll start from here. Mercifully for McIlroy and everyone inclined to wish him well, there was no need for the defibrillators this time. Some histrionics on 18 granted. That goes without saying. It comes with the territory. But McIlroy was spared the hyperventilation of last year's playoff. He got to mark his ball and enjoy the moment of his win, wiping a tear from his eye to claim a second Masters on the spin, this time with his parents, Jerry and Rosie, among the greenside's rapture. Extraordinary. Rory McIlroy is a ridiculous golfer. You don't need to have been at Augusta National this week to figure this out. He is the only elite sports person about whom you feel less confident of success the further he is ahead. How can anyone fly at such altitude and so dangerously close to the ground in the same 20-minute stretch? Never a dull moment.
I love that. You really do capture it. And then I also love this line where you wrote, his driving was poorer than Tiger Woods this week, which is true. I mean, I cannot believe that, you know, with the driving accuracy was what, second worst in the field at one point. And, you know, he had a short game and his putting were so sharp.
On Friday night, when that stat came in that he was 90th of 91 in fairways and regulation, I think a lot of us justified it by saying Rory McIlroy is an exceptional golfer. He is an exception to the rules. Applying these statistics, which do embellish, I think, our understanding of golf tournaments, in this situation, he is the exception that nearly proves these rules. But of course, golf is not about one day or one round or one drive. It's 4 days. Your faults, if they're extrapolated over 72 holes, will not come. It will always come back to bite you. And Saturday was the day that it came back to bite Rory. And that's like, I spent a lot of time on the range watching Rory this week, because as you will know, as anybody who will know watching Rory McIlroy, he's one of the most expressive athletes out there. He doesn't make any point. He doesn't see any point in trying to conceal how he's really feeling. So if he's pissed off, he will show that he's pissed off. And I could see himself and Harry Diamond as caddy, and they were hitting balls on the range and looking down at the track man to read the numbers. And there was no time that I thought he was fully happy with his swing. So I think he fought that all week long, up until and including into Sunday. But again, like, Rory is such a confidence player that when he held his birdie putt on 7 on Sunday, he took a driver on 8. And even that small physical act of taking the driver out of your bag, he just pulled it out with relish. And then after slumping down the fairway on 5 after double bogey, he kind of bounced up the 8th fairway like a guy with kind of rubber kneecaps. He has this bounce when he's in the mood. And when he's in the mood, anything is possible. And it was extraordinary that he was able to get this done, essentially in Amen Corner. And then, because nobody else really came back at him for those last few holes, he could kind of get home by using his short game so well. And it's not something that we speak about often enough, because his long game is just so eye-catching. It's just so spectacularly good. One of the great thrills about watching live sport is to watch Rory McIlroy hit the ball off the tee. It really is something to behold. But his up and down on 17 was totally brilliant. Like, to be able to put that kind of spin on the ball, anybody who plays golf knows that all you have to do is miss your spot by a groove either way and you're in a lot of trouble. And then Rory being Rory, of course, there was a bit of drama on 18 still to come as well. But I think this time the moment was embellished for the fact that he didn't have pressure on his final putt. He could kind of look around. And to do it with his parents there, with them not having been there the year before, I think the story of Rory and the Masters is now a 2-year story. I think whatever last year lacked had this year, and vice versa. And it's an incredible thing, really, because we've spent 15 years talking about the ghosts and Rory McIlroy's psychology and how his game can go to pieces when he goes to Augusta National. And that, of course, is the beauty of the Masters. It means so much to players that it makes them kind of perform below what they're capable of. But now it looks like he has it decoded, because the basic takeaway from last week is that Rory McIlroy won the Masters without his A game. And it takes somebody truly exceptional, I think, to be able to do that.
Oh, my goodness. Just pure genius to be able to do that. I want to go into a few of the things you just mentioned. First of all, when he got to 10, the par save there was wonderful. And 11, par save. Then he hit that amazing tee shot on 12, right, within, 6 feet, 11 inches. Birdies there. Then on 13, he hits an amazing drive. Birdies that one. Gets up and down with just stellar putting on 16 after hitting his tee shot over the green, right? So, yes, his short game and his putting really won him the title. But that whole performance on that second nine was just – just an incredible script. I mean, you couldn't write it any better than that for Hollywood, right?
Yeah, and like Augusta National, it gives you so many chances to bail out. If there's any, I think, doubt about yourself in the pit of your stomach or in your head, Augusta National will give you an opportunity on every single hole to hit a bad shot and shrug your shoulders and say, hey, that's the Masters. It's Augusta National. It's Sunday. you know, better people than me have been beaten up by this course. And I think Rory had that opportunity on every hole. Still, the shot of the week for me is Rory's tee shot on 12. We know just how treacherous that is. We know how treacherous it is, particularly to the people who are trying to win the tournament. Like, who can forget the year that Tiger won when everybody went in the water on 12? And it was interesting that he spoke about a practice round that he had with Tom Watson in one of his first visits to Augusta National. And Tom Watson told him that what you need to do in that hole is ride the wind. Find out where the wind is and don't try and wait for it to stop blowing. Hit it into the... And if you look at Rory's tee shot that day, he aimed straight over the bunker and he hit it through, and all he had to do was find the number and the wind carried it around. And it was such a big hole. And 13 is a funny one, I thought, because his drive was so good there, having hit the pine straw in all the previous days. Like, I took up a position right beside the pine straw, just assuming that this would be where he would land it. But it was so good and so far down that he had no choice but to go for the green. I think he only had 8 iron in. And the safe play was left. And Rory, being Rory, went sort of almost too far left. And that's one of those greens. I know people who have never been to Augusta National get sick of people who have telling them that the elevations can't fully be appreciated. But the sheer slope of that green from left to right is one of the things that you just don't get unless you've seen it. And he hit that brilliant putt to leave himself beneath the hole. And Cam Young had a brilliant pitch that almost holed, and he went further past and missed his putt. So all of those shots, even the ones that Rory made look easy, the putt on 16, it's so counterintuitive to hit your putt that high and rely on the slope and the angle to take the putt close. But look, experience has to count for something in golf. Like, no two holes and no two shots are ever the same. But when you've played as many rounds under pressure at Augusta as Rory McIlroy has at this stage, I don't think there was anything that was any big surprise. The big shake for me, Anne, I don't know about you, but on 15, when he laid up and he was a little bit too far and then decided to play that low wedge in. I actually watched the highlights again this morning, and I think if he misses his mark by 3 or 4 feet, that one could be back in the water and we might be having a very, very different conversation. But everything he did on the back on the second nine was just all about pure nerve, holding his nerve and getting it done. Again, like, the heart was fluttering after the tee shot on 18, but the second shot to find the bunker on 18, to hit over all those patrons and hit over the trees, like, that takes a special kind of golfer. And it goes to show, like a lot of these things on Master Sunday, the people who make all the ground are the guys who are out early, who have no pressure on them. You know, like Tommy or Victor Hovland went out 6 or 7 under early in the day. Tyrrell Hatton put together a serious score. But again, once he got into contention, he couldn't keep it going. And that's why Master Sunday is so incredible. And I just know from walking around the course, every time there was a change of scoreboard, you never felt that anybody was going to come back on Rory McIlroy, because you just didn't get that roar. And I think Sunday was the most pressurized Sunday I can remember at a Masters, even when the wind kind of whipped up in the afternoon as well. And it came down to the guy who could hold his nerve best. And in this case, Rory did it. And in some ways, it's akin to last year. Last year, he double bogeyed one. Last year, he double bogeyed 13. Whereas this time he got his bad shot out of the way on 4. And from about 7 in, he played as good golf, even if it doesn't reflect it in the score. It was about getting it done, and he managed to do it with just a tiny bit to spare.
Sure. I mean, the nerves he showed hitting that approach shot on 18. I mean, his tee shot landed so far right. The CBS cameras couldn't even, yeah. They weren't there to record it. Were you walking with Rory at that point?
So we came off the 17th green after he had put his chip dead. And then I walked up the left-hand side of 18. And we just knew from the reaction that he had not hit a good drive. And it's so funny because last year, one of the big changes that Rory has made to his game in the last couple of years is learning how to hit this low cut. And if you remember back to last year, the 72nd hole, the playoff hole, he hit a brilliant cut off the tee. And for some reason, on Thursday this year, he hit a big high draw and almost hit a tree on the right-hand side and ended up in a bunker. So I actually have no idea what he was trying to do, but I think it was nearly the loosest swing that he had of the week. I think just, you know, I nearly think the fact that he knew he only had to make five made Rory just take his eye off that shot a small bit. So no, to answer your question, Anne, I didn't know where it was, but like, you know yourself, at Augusta National, unless you're behind a tree, there's no real bad lie. There's no, you're never really dead. And when you're that far up the fairway, and Rory said this on Thursday after his press conference, that one of the things he was, or sorry, at his Tuesday press conference, was that one of the things he was going to do was that last year he was taking three woods and five woods off the tee and missing fairways. Whereas this time, at least if you take a driver off the tee, if you miss, you're much closer to the flag. And I think that's maybe what was going on in his head. But once he found the bunker, there was no doubt he was going to get either up and down or up and two putts. And in the end, he had that kind of, that glorious kind of a moment that he never got last year, where he could mark his ball, let Cameron Young put out and kind of take the acclaim of the fans. So look, it was storybook, and Rory doesn't really do things in any other way.
I mean, there was a little bit of Irish luck there, don't you think, Connor? The fact, I mean, that tee shot could have hit, a magnolia or a pine, been behind a tree. I mean, he got very lucky that he did have a shot there.
Oh, 100%. And even, you know, where he landed in the bunker, slightly further back, and it's a downhill lie, and you're in danger of coming off the lip or hitting it too high in the green where the tree put is on. So, no, he did. He rode his luck this week. And like, it is incredible for a guy who plays such good golf that occasionally he plays such bad golf. But again, I think that comes down to his, like, that's part of the reason for Rory's popularity.
Sure.
Like, just speaking from a very Irish perspective, you know, when he was very young and winning majors by, you know, whatever he won at Congressional, there was a little bit of skepticism at home. And it's an Irish mentality thing where if somebody is really good, like really, really good, they seem to lack a level of humanity or something. And over the years, when he had the big losses in Augusta in 2011 or at the US Open in 2014, he showed his fallibility and his human side. And because he has shown that over the years, and he went so long without winning a major, people here have celebrated his subsequent successes even more, because we've all been through the ring. We've seen him at the lowest of the low. And in absolute Rory's credit, he has never shied away from any of that stuff. He has never ran away on a bad day. He has always fronted up and kind of shown us his scars. And I think that's why his successes now are being celebrated even more than they would have been if he'd won in 2011, or if he'd done the Grand Slam when he was 25 and everything was made to look easy for him, because he has a level of just sort of something that you can relate to on a human level. And that's what we tend to like in our sports stars around here.
Absolutely. I mean, it shows Rory's vulnerability, which makes him so much relatable to others. And do you think his team has been able to somewhat capitalize on that fact, the fact that he shows his human side, and despite being such a major talent, he kind of, the whole world kind of is pulling for him because he is so relatable.
Yeah, and you mentioned his team there, Anne, and it's not something that people will spend much time talking about, but Harry and Sean and Michael Bannon, they have been with Rory since he was very young. And he was very famous and very good from a very young age. And he could have left home and brought in lots of people around him, gurus and business managers and all these different kinds of people. But he has a very good upbringing. You can see with Jerry, if you ever speak to him, he's one of the most decent men at court, and Rosie as well. And you can just tell with Rory that he has good values, and that comes across in everything he does. You know, in as much as last year at the PGA in the US Open, he was a bit surly and grumpy and wasn't feeling it, I nearly admire him more for the fact that he didn't pretend otherwise. That's just where he was at that moment. He was struggling to find his purpose, because he had kind of scaled this big mountain that we were all urging him to scale. And then it was over. And the next day we were asking him, can he win every major in the calendar year? And, you know, he showed kind of his humanity in that way too. So I think all those factors combined make him just a very compelling force. And, you know, like I've been at lots of press conferences with lots of sports stars, lots of people who aren't stars who play sport. And Rory is the one who gives you the straightest answer nearly all the time. He has respect. He mightn't always know who the person is asking the question. He mightn't always like the person or the stuff that they have written, but he respects people who kind of come into his orbit, and he has great time for a lot of people. And only in the last 12 months, between winning the Masters, what he did at Betpage in the Ryder Cup, but what he did at the Irish Open here, I'm not sure how much that will have penetrated the American kind of sports psyche, but the Irish Open is a small, small tournament on the DP World Tour, and it does not have a strong field. And basically, Rory carries it on his shoulders, and there's a lot of pressure on him going into it. And at the K Club last year, he eagled 18 to force a playoff and then won it in three holes. And for something that is kind of barely remarked upon in the normal Irish sporting discourse, that was one of the highlights of the year. And he sort of takes great joy in putting these things up on his back and representing the things that he represents. The same with Team Europe. He was the leader on that Team Europe. You could just tell. And I think when you build all those factors in together, you know, there's no one straight answer for why Rory McIlroy is so popular. It's not just because he's so good. It's not just because he's been through a lot of strife. I think there's a lot of factors of kind of popularity and being able to relate to him. And when you put it all together, he makes for a very popular winner of the Masters, I feel.
Oh, absolutely. Most popular, in my opinion. And, you know, he comes from good stock, right? His parents, they sacrificed everything for Rory to pursue his dream. And they actually were there this year. And I kind of thought the fact that Rosie and Jerry were there might have made him maybe push a little more, you know, which you don't want to do in golf, right? Did you feel that way? I thought, oh, gosh, his parents are here. They didn't share in his, they were in Hollywood, in Northern Ireland last year to watch Rory win his first Masters title and captured the career Grand Slam. But now that they're here watching, I kind of thought maybe that would have affected him a bit negatively.
Yeah, I didn't know. Like, I was a bit like you. I could see the argument both ways. But just that line about coming from good stock and what they celebrated, you know, sometimes those stories can get kind of hammed up a small bit, you know, the parents who give up everything and work night shifts and long hours. But actually in the reality and the truth of the Jerry and story is that it's not even hammed up enough for the reality of what they put on the line to give Rory a chance. That's all it was. It was to give Rory a chance. And the fact that they were there, like Jerry got to play Augusta on Sunday as a guest of Rory's, which is only something that the a Masters champion can do. So I think that fed into Rory enjoying his week. I felt that Rory enjoyed his week before the golf tournament started. In previous years, we ask Rory about his preparation. And some years he comes early, some years he comes late, some years he plays the par three, some years he doesn't, some years he, you know, watches Bridgerton, some years, you know. Whereas I felt that this year, the whole week, because of his obligations as champion, were laid out in front of him. He went to the drive, chip and putt. He was there at the women's amateur
event. That's right.
So he had to do the champion's dinner. He was in the champion's locker room. So I don't think Rory had to make any decisions last week. He knew every day what he had to do, and he fit his golf in around that. And just my own sort of, you know, amateur psychology or body language is, I think that actually really suited him.
Yeah, Rory was very relaxed. He freed him up winning last year on that Saturday during the women's AM, Connor. I was standing under the tree, really the only one, and Mike Wan from the USGA and I were talking, and out comes Rory in his green jacket. And he came right up to us. And we talked for about 15, 20 minutes. And I think he was most nervous about the speech he was going to give at the champion's dinner. I think once he got through that, and of course, you know, he was so delighted to be in the par three competition with Poppy, then he could really focus on the golf. But, you know, there's so much responsibility as the defending champion, and he handled everything beautifully. But I really do think that champion's dinner speech really meant so much to him. And I think once he was done with that, then he could really focus on you know, the rest of the Masters.
Yeah, and like it's very difficult for anybody to envisage Rory McIlroy as an outsider in any golf capacity. But if essentially he has been at the Masters, he would go there every year. He was not in the Champions locker room. He told a story about meeting Justin Rose for dinner in the clubhouse last year on the Tuesday night, and as he pulled into the car park, all the previous champions were out on the balcony having cocktails for the champions' dinner. And it's such a crazy concept, Rory McIlroy going to a golf tournament and considering himself to be an outsider. But this was the first year that he wasn't. He was in the champions' locker room. He could bring his dad out on the Sunday. He was at the champions' dinner. He served his own meal and he got to give a speech. And I think rather than putting pressure on him, I actually think returning as champion gave him this kind of warm glow. Because there's no way that Rory McIlroy hasn't thought in the past of what am I going to say at that champions' dinner. He's been thinking about it for 15 years. If ever anyone had a destiny of anything, winning the Masters is Rory McIlroy's destiny. So I'm with you, Anne. I think all of the formalities and all of the obligations that Rory had this week, I think actually played into. He actually said in his press conference on Tuesday, in previous years, I've been sort of anxious to get the golf tournament going, whereas this year I don't care if it never starts. And I knew exactly what he meant. He looked like he was enjoying the week, whereas in the past, I'm not sure Rory ever enjoyed Masters week before the start of the tournament. So I think that dynamic has kind of changed his experience of the week forever.
And he just handles everything so beautifully. And he's such a great, spokesperson. And he's so wonderful in interviews, so articulate. He's just very, very impressive. How do you think, Connor, this win changes the narrative for Rory, or does it?
Yeah, I think it does. I've thought a bit about this, and a lot of the conversations we had last year after he won the Masters, I think a lot of us felt that he would be freed up. And because of the way the venues fell last year, you obviously had Quail Hollow, where he wins nearly every time he shows up. You obviously had Portrush, and then you had Oakmont. I think a lot of people felt, well, the win in the next major thing has gone, the Grand Slam thing has gone. But we saw that he went into a bit of a funk. We saw that he found it hard to motivate himself. Whereas now, I think this is now the phase of his career that we maybe felt he would go through last year. Because to back up a Masters win with another Masters win is huge. And the major venues, particularly next year, whatever about this year, like next year, the Open is in St Andrews. Next year, the US Open's in Pebble Beach. Rory is an absolute. He considers those places cathedrals, and winning in those places will mean even more to him. So, what do I think is going to happen now, Anne? I think Rory's going to play the next 5 or 6 years as an elite golfer with no pressure on him, and that could translate into one more major. It could translate into five, and I wouldn't be surprised if it was either end or anything in between.
I mean, I think he's now more motivated than ever to continue to collect, major trophies. I mean, he has six major titles. He's tied with Nick Faldo, Lee Trevino, and Phil Mickelson. Arnold Palmer, Sam Snead, and Harry Vardon got to seven. Tom Watson got to eight. Gary Player and Ben Hogan won nine major titles. Walter Hagen got to 11. And of course, Tiger at 15 and Jack Nicklaus at 18. I mean, how far do you think he can go?
Well, I suppose there's two questions there, Anne. One is, can he keep this form for the next? How long can he keep this form? So, Rory is still young enough and still athletic enough that I think he can play at this level, not consistently, but get back to this level over the next 10 years. Then the second question is the rest of the field. Who are the guys in the rest of the field? Scotty is obviously the one. Like I think we've spent the last 2 years saying that if everybody plays the best golf, Scotty wins. But I'm not sure whether we've changed our minds over that over the last couple of weeks. But I would love to see those two go at it down the stretch in a major. But I honestly don't think that there is anybody as good as those two. So if Rory shows up with his A game, I really only think Scotty can beat him and vice versa. But I think Rory's in a different phase of his life now, and you have to take that into account. The majors will always be big for him. The Ryder Cup will always be big for him. He will always come home and play the Irish Open because it's important to him. He plays in Australia and India now because that's part of what he does. He goes to the Middle East and plays in Dubai and Abu Dhabi. So I think the consequence of that is that the weekly PGA Tour events aren't that big on his radar anymore. So I don't think he's ever going to win as many PGA Tour events as Tiger, who just wanted to win every week. I think Rory sees those events as nearly warm-up events for the majors. And as long as he keeps competing for majors, I don't know that he has any motivation to play, you know, 3 weeks a row and, you know, go to Valero or go to the Canadian Open or wherever it is. So I think as long as this works for him, he said last week that he hadn't played on any other course other than Augusta for the 3 weeks leading into it, which made us all think, well, how lucky can one guy be? But I mean, if he doesn't need a card in his back pocket in the weeks leading up to a major to perform well at the major, I think we'll probably see a little bit less of him on the PGA Tour. That is one kind of offshoot of this, because he knows what's important to him now. It's not making money. It's not racking up PGA Tour wins. It's winning majors. But the flip side of that is I think he's going to be consistent and, you know, competing in 80% of the majors that he plays in the next 10 years. It's hard to see him going through another funk because, look, what could it possibly be at this stage?
Sure. I definitely agree with everything you just said. And when all is said and done, do you think he will look back and deeply regret the ones that got away, Connor? I mean, when he looks at his overall career, because he could, and many people know that he could have won, you know, a couple more, which, you know, would have added to that total in major championship titles. And do you think he will kind of look back and regret the ones that he didn't win?
I think he regretted them at the time, but I think now it's part of his story. I don't think that anything will ever top Rory's Masters win last year. And the intensity of the emotion and the drama and the theater of that day is highly dependent on what happened to him at the US Open the previous year with Bryson DeChambeau, and what happened with Rory and Cameron Smith in St. Andrews, and what happened in LA Country Club when Wyndham Clark won, and what happened in Augusta in 2011, and what happened in Augusta when he and Patrick Reed went out in the final pairing in 2018. So I think they're all part of the Rory McIlroy story, and Rory McIlroy would not ever pretend to be perfect. And a big chapter of the definitive Rory McIlroy story is those 11 years when he did not win a major, within which is loads of kind of heartache and getting close and not being close enough and trying to figure it out. So I think now, like, six majors is such a big thing, you know, for a European golfer. He, like, the names that you read out there, it's only when you say them out loud that you realize the kind of company that Rory is now keeping. So no, I think he had to crack the code, and it took him a long time to crack the code. But now that he has cracked it, I think the next few years will be very, very fruitful. And in typical Rory fashion, you know, the one that kind of broke the dam last year's Masters was the most dramatic of them all. And I think that's what's going to make this third phase of Rory's career. I think when we look back at Rory's career, we'll have the first phase, which was the one where he was young and winning majors and looked like he could be the new Tiger and, you know, could get to double digits in majors. I think the second phase was that 11 years when he went through all kinds of downs and lulls and heartaches and everything else. And I think we're now into the third and final phase of McIlroy's career, which isn't to say it won't go on for 15 years and he could win another seven majors, but it doesn't have to either. But I think the tension part of his career is now definitely over, and we can kind of sit back and be a little bit more relaxed about watching him totting up more majors.
Aside from his win, his repeat win, Connor, what was the highlight of your week in Augusta?
I'm going to have to be very, very parochial here, Anne, and say that I just by happenstance on Saturday took up a spot right behind the sixth tee, and I watched Shane Lowry hole his shot, and I was standing two people down from his dad, Brendan Lowry, who a lot of Irish people will know because he was a sports star in his own right. And I don't know that any golfer has ever celebrated his successes, whether it was the putt at the Ryder Cup or his various hole-in-ones. And he has an incredible record of hole-in-ones and iconic holes.
Incredible.
But he really, really, really enjoyed that one. And standing behind it just to see the ball flight, I actually, on one side of me was Shane Lowry's coach, Neil Manship. And in the way that people do these things when they see a ball, Neil just said to himself, that's going straight at it. And it pitched absolutely beautiful with a small bit of check. and flew in. And look, you know better than me, there's no better place in the world to watch a hole in one than Augusta National. So I think I enjoyed that as in terms of a single moment. I think that was probably my favorite of the week.
What a week for the Irish. And the celebration was so animated and just so wonderful to watch. Well, I really appreciate your time, Connor. I understand before I let you go that you are award-winning Ilan Pipes player as well. Word is out. What's that all about?
It's a family tradition. It's like Ireland and Scotland and the other Celtic nations would all have a version, a different kind of version of the pipes. So the Irish pipes are called the Ilan pipes, and Ilan is the Irish for elbow, because you have a bellows, you don't blow into them like the Scottish pipes, but they're a much sweeter and quieter instrument than the Scottish pipes, I can assure you. That's kind of a love and a pastime as opposed to anything professional.
Well, that plus covering golf, do you cover other sports as well?
Yeah, I cover predominantly Gaelic games here in Ireland. Gaelic football and hurling are indigenous sports, which are kind of, they reach a crescendo in the middle of summer. And I think I'll be back in the States soon enough for the World Cup as well. So,
oh, great.
Lots of travel. And I hope to get down for, if not the PGA, definitely for the US Open. So, when we have international sports stars in Ireland, we tend to follow them as closely as we can. And we're getting lots of mileage out of Rory McIlroy at the moment.
Oh, what a great story. And I'm sure that dominates your time and your focus. But 20 years at the Irish Independent. I want to go to a hurling match next time I'm in Ireland, which is coming up in mid-May. I'm heading over to Carn Golf Club, play some golf at Carn and Doon Bay. Connor, thank you so much for joining us. And what a ride it truly is to cover Rory McIlroy.
Thank you very much, Anne. It's a pleasure.
Thanks so much.
Sports Interview with Anne Liguori is brought to you by IB Cool Athleisure Wear for men and women. Technology meets fashion with IB Cool, stylish UPF 50 plus sun protection, and ice field technology to cool your body temperature on hot and humid days. Look great and protect your skin. IBKUL.com. And by Tourism Ireland. Ireland is open and ready to welcome you back. World-class courses, celebrated links, spectacular scenery, rich culture, and the warmest of welcomes await. Now is the time to get back to the things that matter most. Now is the time for Ireland. Press the green button and start planning at ireland.com/golf.